Father, you so much comes at us in life, and especially in a fallen world, especially when we ourselves, though regenerated, still have that remnant of the sin nature within us that we look forward to the eradication of as we see you face to face. But until such time as that, we are faced with many challenges, certainly not the least of which is raising children, and especially as they get older. At times it can seem overwhelming. Help those who are here this morning, many not yet having teenagers, to, by thinking ahead, first of all, gain some perspective on what they're dealing with now, and secondly, to perhaps when that time comes, it won't be such a shock and they'll be prepared to understand some of the underlying issues and that will prove helpful to them. Thank you for the discussion we've been having lately. Just fantastic discussion and iron sharpening iron. It was wonderful. Thank you for that. Thank you for this group and for their dedication to you and to your word. In Christ's name we pray. Amen. All right, we're still dealing with parenting teenagers as one of our odds and end items. The first, which probably makes you wonder, how long is this class going to go? And I don't know the answer to that question. I'm not saying every section will take as long as we've taken on this one, but if I try to predict, I'm grotesquely inaccurate. Yesterday, Martin and I were working on something at the church, and I called my wife called and said, "Oh, just wanting to know when you think you might be home." And I said, "Well, you know," and I gave her an estimate, and she said, "Okay." And when I was on my way home, because I was later than I thought, and she said, "Yeah, I pretty much double your estimate, and that gets pretty close to reality." So I'm not even sure I'm that close on this. I think you'd have to about quadruple my estimate. But nevertheless, we're not. I hope you're not in a hurry. I hope you're enjoying this. I hope this is beneficial. So we'll just keep plugging along. Quick review, as we always do, to kind of get our brains up to speed. As we parent teens, we can't help but be reminded of that well-known illustration that the Apostle Paul uses in 1 Corinthians 13, where he says, "When I was a child, I spoke like a child, I thought like a child, I reasoned like a child, and when I became a man, I gave up childish ways." Now, to quickly be fair with the context, Paul is not giving a lesson on parenting. He's actually using parenting, something that's known in parenting, as an illustration of the contrast between life as we know it now and life as we'll know it when we're face to face with the Lord. But it does bring to mind the transition, right, that takes place from a child to a man or a woman. And so that's what we're seeing. During the teen years, our kids are transitioning from being children and becoming full-fledged men and women. And I want to throw something in this morning. I haven't thought to do it up till now, but there are some Christian writers, good ones in fact, that speak on parenting and from a Christian point of view and so forth. And some of them object to the idea of even using a term like teenagers or teens. And the objection is something along the lines of, this is a kind of a new term that didn't used to be a focus on teens as distinct or separate from children or adults. They were just sort of a part of a continuum of kids growing up. And there wasn't like what we have today. And it really kind of started, I think, around the 60s with the music and all that went on there. I lived through that time and remember it well. But the teenagers became sort of a subculture distinct from and separate from their parents and their family. And it really was not a good thing in many ways. So they don't like the term. They want to throw it out and just call them young men and women or what have you. And, you know, that's fine. I don't really have a problem with using it. It's a term we all use. So I'm just trying to use everyday language. But other than to say, you know, I get their point. But we do live in today's world where the teens tend to go off and become a subculture. We don't want that. So just a comment there. Anyways, our kids are transitioning from being children to being full-fledged men and women. And as parents, it's our privilege and responsibility to guide them through that process. And we've just talked about how, as they go through this process, for them and for us as parents, it's both an exciting time and a frustrating time and a scary time. And there's a lot of emotions that come and go for all of us. And because it's not just a one day you're a child, one day you're an adult, snap your finger and there they are. It seems like it when you look back on it. I'm going to reflect on that in a moment with a song, actually, we have lined up for you this morning. Short song. but it's just this transition, and you're everybody's trying to get used to it. I think a physical illustration that just popped into my head right now, so I'll just let it go right out my mouth. We used to have a kitchen. There was a chair we kept in the corner of the kitchen just for sitting on or whatever. And it was right near the back door. And my dad was sitting at the table, and I had to kind of go behind him and go around that chair and go out the door. And this was at the stage when I was in a growth spurt. I mean, I grew so rapidly that my music teacher, who saw me once every 2 weeks, 1 week I came, and I came 2 weeks later, and she goes, she just got stunned. She says, "You have grown since the last time I saw you." I just grew inches. You know, I went forever not maturing at all, and then all of a sudden, whoop, you know, and that's, of course, you see I'm kind of tall today. I went from being the shortest one in the family to being the tallest one in the family by far. And so I was coming around this corner behind my dad, who's sitting at the table, and I wasn't used to my long legs. And I ended up hitting the chair, you know, and stumbling and knocking over my dad, who wasn't known for patience. He said, "Why don't you watch where you're going? Why are you in such a hurry?" I'm like, "Oh, sorry, dude." You know. That's a physical illustration of what teenagers are going through. They're not used to their long legs yet. And they're not, you know, they don't have the control like adults do. And they didn't even have long legs when they were kids. You know, I mean, so I just hope that came to mind. Hope that helps you. So, okay, a little bit more review. Thus far, I've given a lot of advice as to how to parent your teens. And the most important piece of advice, which I gave you, and I gave it first, is you want to teach your teens to fear the Lord. Proverbs 1:7. Such an important thing. If you failed at everything else in parenting, and I hope you don't, I mean, the other things are important, but you got this right, you'd be okay. if you can impart to your kids the value of a relationship with God, you know, we talk about fearing the Lord. We had a whole section on that. I'm not going to try to bring you up to speed on that, but because we've already talked about it. And this is not necessarily just fear quaking your boots, though there's an element of that. But this is more a respect for the Lord, but a fear and a desire to do that which is pleasing to Him above all, even above what you want from your kids. So a very, very important principle, and I don't want to neglect to emphasize that again, even though we made the point. Good thing to review. I went on to give advice in other areas that I hope will prove helpful and beneficial to you with your teens. And we talked about giving your teens more and more responsibility, not being so quick to do things for them, helping them to accept more and more adult roles and adult responsibilities, because recognizing it's a transition time, encourage that. Now, you can't do it all at once. You just want to do it as is appropriate and as quickly as they will allow in terms of their own maturity and where they are with things and so forth. The other area, again, I'm sort of generally summarizing here. We gave many points on all this. Having deep and frequent conversations with your teens, carefully listening to them and helping them think through issues and helping them to own their professed Christian faith in every area of life. And a lot of verbiage there. But let me just kind of unpack this just a little bit. So, deep and frequent conversations with your teens. This is just not just the over-the-top stuff. Honey, would you get the such and say, "Hey, what time are you coming home tonight?" No, I mean, you're going to have those, obviously. There's nothing wrong with that. But those times, however you do it, whenever you do it, tends to be, seems like late at night with teens. I don't. Maybe your teens aren't that way or won't be that way. I don't know, but mine were. And, you know, just when they're ready or when you're driving on a trip, just the two of you maybe, spending that time, or just every day, I mean, around the dinner table. I'm not saying just make it only special occasions. Always, you know, engaging and listening, very carefully listening. We want to talk all the time. We want to tell them. We have so much wisdom we want to impart to these poor things. You need to listen to them. Not because you need to get wisdom from them, although at times you will, actually. They may surprise you. That's not the general flow of the information and wisdom, but it can happen. But really, you want to listen to them because you want to understand them. You want to know where they're coming from. You want to know where they are so you can better parent them, better help them, better sympathize and empathize with what they're going through. Sometimes they may have funny reactions to things, and you might tend to be like my dad when I went around the corner and kicked that chair. I understand him having that reaction, but he didn't think through what I was going through. I'm not crying about it. I'm just saying, you know, but, as a parent, it's good if you can have that empathy with your kids and understand where they are. I'm not talking about compromising or giving them a pass when you shouldn't. You know what I'm saying? So that's important. And what you're trying to do as you have these conversations, you're trying to think through issues, help them think through issues, and you're wanting to help them have ownership of their professed Christian faith. I'm assuming a professed Christian faith. By the time most of your kids are teenagers, hopefully they will profess that they're Christian. Now, not all do. And that's a sad thing if they don't. But most will profess that they're Christians kind of early on. At least that's been my experience in Christian families who made the gospel a priority and so forth. But that doesn't necessarily mean they're really in, so to speak. I mean, the Spirit's really worked. You kind of have your own sense of that. But okay, so they made this profession, and they're on board with you because you told them, and that's just the way kids are. You tell them pretty much that's their reality for now. And that starts to change. When they get to be teenagers, things start shifting. And that's not to say they'll reject your reality, but they'll question it. And they want to take it on, and they want to think about, do I really own this? Don't be insulted by that. Don't be upset by that. That's a normal thing for them to go through. And of course you want them to engage and adopt your worldview, and in particular you want them to adopt the biblical Christian worldview. That can't be forced or rushed. But that's what you're after. You want them to own it. You want it to be their faith. And I've told you stories, I won't repeat them, you know, where even at times my kids would catch me out. I don't mean that they had a bad attitude. I mean in a way that I needed to be caught out. I was kind of shaving some corners ethically. And it's just a small area. It wasn't a big deal. But my son's like, Dad, it's not right. And he was right. I had to repent. So, you know, but he owned it. He owned it at that point, right? So he wasn't just calling me out so he could have, you know, like he was trying to put himself over me. He didn't have an attitude about it. It was just something where he honestly was fearing the Lord and looking at a dad who had taught him to fear the Lord and thinking, Dad's not fearing the Lord right now. And he said something about it. And, you know, he was right. That was great that he owned it, even though it was a tough moment for me, but I needed that tough moment. So your kids, I mean, they're growing up and it's happening so fast. You use every minute you have. I really say that. Okay, so end of review. Today, we have a topic I think you're all going to enjoy, teens driving, okay? Now, I'm looking around the room. Of course, there's some teens here, but some of you who have kids, you know, the driving thing's kind of out there still. Maybe you can't even picture this yet, but before you know it, I'm telling you, you're going to turn around and they're going to be driving, or they're driving age at least. And they're going to turn around and they're going to be an adult having a family. This happens. I'm telling you, looking back on it, it happens so fast. You're in the middle of it now. It feels like it takes forever. Oh, when you get to the end of the day, you know. But I'm telling you, when you get there down the road, you look back and you go, what happened? That goes so fast. I can't believe it. So before we jump into this, I'm just a little different this morning. I'm always aiming at your head, trying to get the heart, but I'm aiming at the head. And I don't always aim necessarily at more of an emotional level. And there's a reason for that. I think primarily that would be where we're aiming. But sometimes it's good to bring our feelings along with our head. So that point I just made, there's a song that's been done, I think, by a couple of different groups over the years. I just remember it by Kenny Loggins called Turn Around. Have you heard it? If you haven't, I just want to play it. It's a short song. I'm going to put the words up on the screen for you. And just kind of kick back and enjoy this for just a second. Assuming that all the technology works, which is always a possibility that it won't. Thank you. I hope that was worthwhile for you. That almost makes me cry, and I'm not easily made to cry. and you can relate to that probably already. Turn around, you're two. Turn around, you're four. I mean, you've been through that one already, right? So your kids will be driving before you know it. Your kids will be out the door having babes of their own before you know it. I think it's a perspective worth thinking about, and I think it's a perspective worth meditating on, because as my wife said one time, you know, with our kids, I just treat them like pesky kids a lot of times. And she said, you didn't treat them like they were little people, which they are. And that was a good statement. I don't think I took it too well at the time, but probably should have. But they are, they're little people. They're going to be adults, and they're going to have families, and they're going to remember all the things many of the things that happen. So take great care. I know you all take it seriously, but I just want to encourage you in that. And I hope I have. Okay, teens driving. Perhaps one of the most exciting and scariest things a teen will learn to do is to learn to drive. And I thought a good way to kick us off is Ted Tripp tells this following story, just a short story here. Hello, Dad. I recognized the voice on the other end of the line, of course. It was my son, who stopped by my study earlier to borrow the car and go to the mall. Hi, what's up? I queried, trying to sound casual and confident to him. I locked the keys in the car, was his nervous reply. Oh, that's okay. I have another key in my wallet. I'll come over. Well, here I was interrupted. Dad, before I locked the keys in the car, I had an accident. Just a little one, and not too bad. And I don't think it was my fault. Oh, Dad, by the way, I'm all right. One thing you learn about teenagers is that accidents are always just little ones, and they're never at fault. I got to say that's somewhat true. Of course, I think even in some cases my kids had accidents that technically weren't their fault, but we'll talk a little bit more about that. So there you go. There may be some exceptions, but for the most part, the question is not if a teen is going to have a car accident, but when. And I'm actually quoting my insurance agent here, because I called to complain about, what in the world kind of rates are you charging my kid for driving a car? He says, there's a reason why insurance companies charge what they do. They don't try to be mean. They run the statistics. Your teenagers are going to have accidents because they're inexperienced. That's just all there is to it. Most, though not all, of our accidents will not end up causing major injuries or loss of life, though most likely there will at least be some financial loss involved. And of course, they can result in serious physical injury and death. But at least my experience, and this is just me looking around, thank God most of them don't go that far. They tend to be fender bender kind of things. And nowadays, the fender bender basically totals the car, you know, because bodywork is so expensive. So there's going to be some money has to be spent to get things to get your team back on their feet driving. You will no doubt want to keep them in your prayers, but what else can you do about this fact that they have accidents and you're going to be concerned about that? It's going to, you know, I mean, some people roll with life better than others. Some people are just white knuckle parents. You know, they just they feel stressed. And so I want to give you some suggestions, that things that may be helpful to you as when you get to this stage. Assuming that you or your spouse has the right temperament to do it, consider teaching them to drive yourself rather than just assuming they learned everything they need to know in driver's ed. Now I want to pass something out, and Ethan, can I pick on you again to help me pass this out? You're always helpful in that. Thank you. I don't know how it works today. When I went to school, so I don't want to assume anything here. I'll just tell you how when I went to school and why I made the statement the way I made it. When I went to school, driver's ed was a regular course that kids took in school. I don't think you had to take it, but most did in their sophomore year. And you would go out with some teacher or bus driver, driver's ed guy, whoever it was, and they had a school car, and they had a know, they would ride beside you. I think they even had like an extra brake over there where they could stop the car if you didn't, and all that kind of thing. And it was a automatic transmission, all that. And so anyways, really nice. And so I took that course, and my kids all took that in school. Now, I don't know, of course, if you're homeschooling, you know, I don't know, there's probably alternatives, I'm sure there are. I don't know how that works for you. If you have other options, I'm not knocking any of those. I mean, I think there are actually like driving schools out there where people who are professional teachers teach their kids to drive and so forth. That's great. And if you want to go that route and that's all you want to do, I'm not here to tell you did something wrong. But I'm suggesting an alternative or a possibility. It's not even an alternative, sir. It's a both and. That you might have a part in teaching your teens about this important thing that they're going to take on that puts them at so much risk and puts others at so much risk. So when I taught, I did this all for my kids. And I did a lot of things wrong parenting, but I think I might have done this one right. I feel like I did. That's why I'm sharing it with you. You can critique it and maybe you can disagree, but all four of my kids, we have I ended up calling the Bob Conley School of Driving. And it was fun. They looked forward to it. Now, they've had it in school or whatever. I didn't care what they had. We started at ground zero right from the beginning. And I made all my kids, and again, you don't have to do this. I made them all get a stick shift for their first car and learn how to drive on a stick shift, which most of them had learned on an automatic. And those of you who have driven a stick versus automatic, you know what I'm talking about. That's a whole new world. And I did that for a couple of reasons. One, you never know when you might want to drive a stick shift someday. I mean, it's not as common nowadays. Back when I was growing up, it's very common. But it's still common in sports cars and trucks. And it's just nice to know. I've used it many times in my life outside of, you know, my cars that I owned. So I thought it'd be good for them to have. I just want them to have that little advantage. Not a big deal. Not a little factor. And you may or may not like this or agree with this, but with the automatic transmission, it almost feels too easy, and they can get a little cocky. Say, yeah, I got this thing. You know, there is no room for arrogance when you're learning to drive a stick shift. It is a humility enforcer, big time. And there's nothing like the bucking bronco is how you start off, you know. And then boom, 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 you know, this business, when they first go to start a car, every time they start, even though you've told them 15,000 times how to do it, and you walk them through it, and you put it, you get the clutch in, you put it in gear, rev the engine just a little bit, not too much, no, just a little bit, now let the clutch out slow, and you're going to feel it start to catch, no, you wait, till, when you feel it start to catch, then you really slow down on letting the clutch out, and you start to give it a little more gas, and then, you know, and I'll get in the driver's seat, and I just make this thing look like it's the easiest thing ever. They're like, oh yeah, I got this. I said, well, you don't have it yet, but hang on. And they get in there, boom, it's fucking Bronco every single time. And they're like, how can I do this? You made it look so easy. I said, yeah, I know. Okay. So, little method to my madness, if you follow where I'm going there. Okay, so the first thing I did was, we didn't get in the car right away. First step, we had academic classroom training, if you will. And I would type up just no big long outline. It wasn't like this parenting course where I went on and on. It was more of a one or two session deal. And this is actually a handout that I gave my son Joss, the last one I taught him to drive. This is the actual one I used. I saved it. It's kind of like, you know, some people save in bronze or baby shoes or something like that. They don't do that anymore, do they? No. Okay. Anyhow, I saved my driving lesson for my kid. So you're looking at the real deal right here, for better or for worse. So let me just walk through it with you. Here's the first thing I tell them. Primary objective in driving is to get from point A to point B without having or causing an accident. Remember, fear of accidents is the beginning of good driving. All right? I really stress the importance, the true real danger of having an accident. I think it's the biggest thing I'm worried about. I'm worried about morality and a lot of other things in other areas of my life. But when it comes to driving, I'm just worried about having an accident. Some other things too, but that's a big one. So I say here, a good driver is not a matter of intelligence, because they all think they're intelligent, and many more. Has a good attitude, really important. Has good driving habits, which come from experience, which you remind them, by the way, you don't have yet. Hang in there, you'll get it. And is attentive, pays attention. You're not playing with the radio. You're not, you know, chatting with friends. That's going to happen, but you really need to be attentive when you're driving, especially when you're just learning. Say, primary objectives, I have Josh, I have his name on here, this is for him. Develop good driving habits. Remember, this takes time. So I want him to understand, you're not going to learn this like this. Everything is, you know, microwave and everything nowadays, everything is quick, quick, quick. And kids are used to that. That's not the way driving works. It takes time. And I gave him some ground rules. Follow the law to the letter. I even made them keep the speed limit to the speed limit. Now you may say, well, everybody should do that. Okay, I'm not going to argue with you about that. I sometimes will push a little bit on that personally, which I'll get to that in my last point. Do not argue with the instructor, with the instruction, at least not at the time. Now, if you want to question later why I said or did or whatever, or point of order, what have you. But when we're in the middle of driving, we're in a heat of battle, you do what I tell you. Yep. And do it now. And don't question it. We'll question things later. And you may not like this one. Do as I say, not necessarily as I do. Now, why did I put that there? Well, I should be a perfect driver and so forth. But I obviously was not. And so, you got to understand teenagers and the teenage mindset. Not all, but some. Many. It's kind of, well, you don't, you know, yeah, do this or that or the other. And we're not going to talk about that. I don't care whether I do it or not. If it's right, you're going to do it. And, you know, we can argue about what I do later if you want to. I mean, that's not off the table. But in terms of your driving lessons, you do the right thing. Don't be sitting there trying to think about, oh, do you do that? You know? Maybe you don't like that I put that in there, but I thought that was helpful and that was important. Here's some warnings. You will be anxious to progress, but please be patient. And this is the way it starts. In the beginning, when they're in the buck and bronco mode, you know, they're going to really want to get past that. They want to be driving. They want to get out there. They want to have their own car. They're tired of these lessons already. And although they're excited about them at first, but after a while, it's like, can we get, you know, when do we get to do this for real? Be patient. And sometimes they despair. It's like, am I ever going to be able to get up, you know, a hill with the clutch? And, you know, you will. I promise. You will be great. You're going to be good. But it's going to take time. So that's how they start. And really, that's even though they're inexperienced, that's actually safer than the next mode. I say it right here. Your confidence will soon exceed your abilities. And I tell them, I said, you're going to get to a point. You're going to start off feeling very humble, which you should. And you're going to realize how inexperienced you are, how bad you are at driving. But at some point, you're going to think, hey, you know, watch me take this hill with the stick. You know, and I'm good. I said, that's when you are the most dangerous. You are incredibly dangerous when you think that. You should never get so cocky that you think that, you know, I got it all down. So I just want to warn them about that. Because they do. They will. They'll think they're fantastic. They'll think they can drive and they can flip the stuff in and out of the radio and they can be talking to their friends and handing a Coke around or whatever, you know. You don't have that kind of ability. I don't think anybody needs to do all that. But, okay. Observations. If everyone obeyed all traffic laws, there would theoretically be no accidents. I don't know if I can prove that completely, but for the most part, obviously. But everyone does not always obey the law. Ta-da! So, that's the thing. I mean, if everyone followed the law and you follow the law, yeah, we're probably going to do okay. But the reality is that's not how it works. And people out there are going to do stupid things, and you got to be prepared for that. Now, this is an important point. Most accidents are avoidable. Always be prepared for other drivers to make mistakes or make stupid moves or what have you. Always. And this is where teens have accidents, even the ones that aren't their fault. But they could have been avoided sometimes. Now, I know there are accidents that are unavoidable. I mean, I'll tell you, you know, there's a lady I know, she was an adult, and she was driving going up a hill, and a girl who was high on drugs came over the other side of the hill. She couldn't see that other car. She was going at some phenomenally high speed. And she jumped up over the hill and came over, and she crossed into the other lane and had a head-on collision with this lady. She survived it somehow. That was not her fault. That was unavoidable. You cannot avoid an accident like I don't think. Okay, so there are some. But I have these all the time. I have one the other night. Driving down a highway. I think it was like Chenal or something, you know, a lot of traffic and moving, and I was in the right lane, And it was at night, and there was a gas station over there, and there was a truck pulling forward, kind of coming up to like they're going to try to wait for a chance to get out into traffic. Nothing abnormal there. But I was just walking. In fact, I was talking to my wife, and I was kind of thinking about other things, but training. I trained myself to always look, always be aware, always be sharp. And at the corner of my eye, I saw his wheels still turning. They didn't stop turning. He was moving so slowly you couldn't even see him moving, but I saw the wheels kind of turning, and it made me nervous. So I put I backed off the gas, and I put my foot on the brake. I didn't step on the brake. I just put my foot right above the brake, and I was nervous, and I was watching. And sure enough, if that guy didn't wait till I was just right in front of him, and he pulled out in front. And I was ready for it. I hit the brake, apologized to my wife, but she said, no, I understand. That's the thing that your teens need to learn. That's the thing hopefully we all have learned. But those are important things about driving, right? So that, now if I had had an accident, actually, you want to know what? If he gets in front of me and I hit the rear of him, it's considered my fault. Only if he hits my side, I think, and it's his fault or something. I forget. The law sometimes aren't always what you'd think. But anyhow, I don't care. I always tell them, I don't care if everybody violates the rule. I'm willing to have my rights completely surrendered. If the other guy didn't have the right of way and he tries to take it, fine, have the right of way. I'm happy with that. Okay? Anyhow, so that's kind of school driving. And then, you know, they had different courses I took them on. How are we looking here? Okay. We might not have a lot of discussion today, but we'll see. Sorry, I think this is worth going into. I hope it is. I would get them in the car, and first thing I do is just drive around the neighborhood. We live in a nice, quiet neighborhood. And just take it easy. Stop at each stop sign. Full stop, please. No California stops. Still the speed limit, 25. I know that's slow. And, you know, all on. We go around, and not much traffic. Compete with occasionally a car comes up, a little stress, level rises. Don't worry. Just relax. They're going to stay on their side. You stay on your side. We're good. So then they get comfortable with that. They're ready to get out of that little deal. I said, okay. So I take them to, I think we went to Raywinder Field a lot of times. We went to this big, giant parking lot. And we'd do a couple things. The first thing I did was I would put a quarter on the ground. I would say, I want you to, you know, drive around out here and then come back to that quarter. I want you to put your left front tire on that quarter. And then I want you to put, next time I want you to do it, put your right front tire on that quarter, and so forth, and have each tire on the quarter. Well, you know, they get out and they think the tire was on there. It's like way over here, you know, like, what? You know, I said, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get them aware of where their car is. You need to know where your car is. And I'm not even super good at this, obviously, but nobody's perfect. But just to make them aware how sometimes there can be off in their perceptions about where the car is. Another one we do, I love to go out on, especially a rainy day or an icy day. Raywinder Field has this huge parking lot, and it's, you know, there's nothing anywhere. You know, at that time, I didn't go when there was cars out there. I went, there's just nothing out anywhere. And I would get out there, and I would show them. I would gun it, get the car going full speed, and then I would jam on the brake and take it into a spin and watch the car start to spin. And they're freaking out. Like, whoa, what are you doing? You know, and what I would show them is, as your car goes into a spin, turn in the direction of the rear of the car to get out of the spin. Relax, stay calm, stay on top, and get this thing down. And so I let them do it. It was scary. They didn't get out of the spin the first time. I didn't care. I thought, I'm in the parking lot. Who cares? You know, I said, just don't get near the borders, you know, stay out in the middle. And we would practice that until they got good, where they could come out of a spin on ice or on water. Isn't that going to be helpful later? You bet your life. Then we would go downtown, and downtown has a lot of one-way streets. I said, no, yeah, I would just say, turn right here, turn left here, go straight here. And I said, now, I go warning up front. There are one-way streets downtown. And you, what does a one-way street mean? You can only go one way. I said, I am going to trick you, and I'm going to tell you to turn the wrong way on a one-way street. Do not obey me. Obey the law. So we'd be going along, and I'd right and left. And I disarmed them. You know, we'd turn out. I wouldn't trick them for a long time. And one second later, okay, turn left here. And they started, whoa, whoa, don't. What did you start to do? What was that right there? Look at that sign. One way. You know? Does that sound harsh? I don't know. I mean, you're trying to teach them, because I forget even today. You know, my wife goes, Bob, it's a one-way street. What are you doing? so we want them to learn that. The final, oh, and of course we had the clutch test. I forgot that was even before we got on the road. I would take them to Fellowship Bible Church, has the old campus, has these beautiful hills. And I would get the car out, and we'd park it on a hill and put the emergency brake on. And first I would do a demo. So now, just to show you that what I'm about to ask you to do is possible, let me show you. So we get in there, I take the emergency brake off. Of course, you can feel the car immediately start to roll backward. I flip that clutch out and rev it a little bit. And take right off nice and smooth. I say, now see, doesn't that look easy? And they say, yeah. I said, it ain't. I said, you know how when you first started driving with the clutch and you were bucking all that? I said, we're fixing to start all over again. So they would get in, and it would go on and on and on. I mean, we sometimes took several weeks to get that one done. But they would get one. They could park on a hill and start. They have to. They're going to get on a hill somewhere in traffic, and somebody's going to be behind them. So they had to have that down. They had to have it down pat. And I made them get it down pat. Okay, the final exam, there may have been some other little things, but the final exam was where La Harpe gets on going north onto I-30. We would go out there at rush hour. And you've got a merge lane, and traffic is just crazy. We go out there at rush hour at 4 or 5 o'clock at night. Traffic, people agitated and aggravated and honking their horn and just being what people are. And you've got, I mean, they have the shortest on-ramp in the city of Little Rock, I think. That's why I picked it for my final exam. I said, you are going to have to get out there, and you got to merge with traffic. It's moving at freeway speeds, and you only have this little on-ramp to get up to that, and you got to figure out how to get in between some cars. Now, some are going to try and get you not to get in there. They're going to try and pull up and keep you from getting on, rude as they are, and you're going to have to figure out how to deal with that. Hit your brake or it's something. You're going to have to figure out a slot and get on. And so once they did that, it was kind of like the old kung fu, once you can take the pebble from my hand, grasshopper. I don't know if you're familiar with that. Then they were ready to, you know, go drive. So that was the Bob Connelly School of Driving. Just encourage you and all that. Some people don't have a temperament for it. My dad tried to teach me how to drive. He did not have a temperament to teach me how to drive. I was the oldest kid. He lost it. He started screaming at me. And I was so upset, and he was so upset. By the time we got done, I don't think I was ever going to learn how to drive. Finally, wisely, they let my mom teach me how to drive. And I gave her some scares. Like the time I went down a very large divided highway with concrete dividers, and I accidentally went down the wrong side. I was going to traffic coming head on. My mom was very calm. She said, Robert, you're going the wrong way. Get over here, Robert. It's fun. Okay. So that's that part. Here's a few other little things. As best I can tell, when a time comes for their teen to drive, the majority of parents simply allow them to drive the family car. Best I can tell. If you choose to do this, I can't fault you for doing so. But you may want to consider taking the approach that I took with my teens. Before I would even consider allowing them to get behind the wheel of the car and have the Bob Connelly driving lessons, none of it. Before we even got there, they had to purchase their own car with their own money. And, you know, I might help them get a loan or something. Although I tried to discourage it. I tried to encourage them to save up. But, you know, we worked that out. That wasn't a hill to die on necessarily. And, here's the key, have a job where they made enough money to pay for all ongoing car expenses. Insurance, gas, maintenance, etc., etc., etc. They own their car. Now, it's a little harder for them to get into the deal with this kind of a stipulation, right? And maybe teens would be sitting there going, oh, man, I'm glad my parents didn't do that. Well, okay, that's fine. Why did I do this? Anybody want to guess? Why do you think I would do this?
More careful with their own.
That's right. You always are more careful with what you personally own and are responsible for. If they have a car accident in their car, am I out any money? No. I mean, I hope they live through it. That's my concern. Something, we don't have a car. Oh, can I borrow the family car? No, you cannot borrow the family car. You wrecked your car. Get it fixed or whatever. But how am I going to get to work? My car's not fixed. Well, I would call the bus down the street or a taxi and see if you can get yourself a ride. What? I said, yeah, what? Or, we, you know, I guess I could give you a ride for a while, but maybe you'll have to, you know, trade me something for that. You know, I just, I mean, that's the way life is. And that sounds a little tough. And look, if you're a parent and you don't want to do it that way, this is it. You don't have to do this, okay? I'm not saying if you don't do this, you're somehow less than as a parent. I'm just suggesting it was very helpful. And honestly, I think they were more careful. I'm not saying any teen has an accident on purpose. They don't. But you're just more aware if you're thinking, this is my baby, you know, that I just paid all this money for. And I've already been through a situation where I had to buy another car or take the bus. I don't want that to happen again. So you're thinking more, whereas kids just get a little more casual if it's not theirs. So, and it's a great place to teach them responsibility. Remember how we talked about how you want to teach your kids responsibility? What better place? They're motivated, most of them. I mean, every once in a while I meet a teen who doesn't care to drive. Very few, but every once in a while there is one. Most teens are highly motivated to drive. They want to drive more than life itself, almost. And that's great because motivation provides the incentive to, you know, go to work and do all kind of other things that you want them to have the incentive to do. It's built right in. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. That's my thought. Again, I don't know how everybody's feeling about it, but we got just a few minutes. I'm sorry, I ran us kind of long with the song and all that kind of stuff, but I hope you think it's worthwhile. Let's just throw a few questions out there for you. We'll take about 5 or 10 minutes. What kind of fear or excitement do you experience as you think about the idea of your child getting behind the wheel of a car? That's how you view them, your child. What do you think about the idea of personally teaching your teen to drive? And what do you think about the idea of making teens pay for their own car and pay for all their associated expenses? These are options. They are not requirements, biblically or otherwise. Just suggestions from me as maybe wisdom, maybe a good way. So, thoughts? Anybody want to? Again, we don't have a lot of time. Sorry, I ran us a little long, but any thoughts or ideas on some of this? What do you all think about some of this kind of approach?
A teenager getting behind the wheel is no different than me getting behind the wheel whenever it's snowing outside. I may be fully confident in what I can do
in
snow, sliding around on the road and keep control.
Yep.
But that doesn't mean the people around me are going to.
Yeah, that's right.
So, I mean, you have the combination of their inexperience on them,
yep.
But you also have other people that are either inexperienced or even just negligent in how they drive that are going to be on the road with them, such as that person who was on drugs coming over the hill.
Exactly, yeah. And some of that's even unavoidable, but where you can... Yeah, you're right. We often all say, right, on an icy road, you know, I'm not so worried about my car, but I'm worried about the other guy.
Yeah.
And you need to be. Because people, you cannot assume confidence out there. Not everybody went through the Bob Conley School of Driving. Even if they did, they still make mistakes, you know. Other thoughts?
Well, I too was going to mention the ice and snow.
Let me come back where I can get you on the recording, Kim.
The ice and the snow introduces a whole new... series of principles on physics.
Yes.
And everything you learned is now different.
Yes.
And like Jonathan said, here in Arkansas, we have it, but it's few and far between. And so the ability to build the experience isn't a few weeks, it's years.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to take to accumulate the experience. So every time you're on the ice, you are learning.
Yeah, and you know, you bring up something. A lot of times I was teaching kids, maybe it happened to be in the summer or the spring, there was no ice. So we tried to get rain, you know, but sometimes it wasn't even rain, you get a dry spell or something. So if that happened and they got all the way through the Bob Conley School of Driving, that's fine, they could drive. But the first snow they hit, the first ice, school resumed.
That's awesome.
You know, the driving was put on hold and as quickly as possible. I tried not to interfere with their schedule because they've got commitments by then. But I said, we're going to have to get in the car and we're going to have to requalify, and it's going to have to be, and we're going to have to figure out how to do the Waywinder field, because again, turning in the direction of the rear of the car, how to get out of a spin, you just need to know how to do that. The biggest thing is keep a cool head. Sometimes you could do silly things. Martin, do you remember the time that we were going over the Broadway Bridge, you and I? It was in my Suburban, I think. I don't know what happened. It was raining, and you and I were chatting or whatever, and for some reason I pulled a stupid stunt or move. I wasn't trying to be bad. And I ended up putting that thing into a spin. And the car, the rear end swung completely around. This is on a Broadway bridge. Broadway, you know, this is when we had a bridge. we were just coming off of it, I think. And swung that thing around, and I managed to get it back. And we were going 180 degrees from where we were going. We were going back over the bridge again. And
that was when it was wet.
Yeah, it was wet, yeah. Huh? Oh, it wasn't wet?
No, it was wet.
Oh, it was. Okay, yeah, I thought it was.
I don't think you did anything wrong. It was one of those fluky things
that yeah.
was wet enough to where you either hit the gas just right and spun itself around.
Yeah.
That happens.
Yeah. That happens. I got to say, Martin was really cool. He tensed up and he grabbed, his knuckles turned white and he grabbed two points on the car, you know, with, like that. Didn't say a word, didn't scream, what are you doing? Yeah. And we got all the way around and then he kind of relaxed and he said, well, that was kind of interesting. I thought he made some kind of little comment. I said, yeah, that was kind of different, wasn't it? He goes, yeah, I think it was kind of different, really. How long ago was that, Martin?
That was at least 20 years ago.
Yeah. So we're always learning, right? We're always learning.
So the wet surfaces can vary.
Those what?
Those wet surfaces, like in the summertime.
Yes.
Just when a dew or a mist.
Yeah.
Those you just never consider.
Well, especially when it first gets wet because you got all that powdered rubber on the road, and it just, yeah. it's a deadly mix. You know, it's almost like ice. I mean,
and you'll get that more than ice here in Arkansas.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
A couple comments. One, I think it's great that I'm not the only person who does sheets like this.
This is a canard-like thing, isn't it?
I can relate.
I knew you could, yeah.
One of the points I hear you say, a good driver has a good attitude.
Yes.
And you can tell Christian drivers and non-Christian drivers
oh, yeah.
by the attitude.
Yes.
The road rage, cutting in front of people, yielding to allow the person who's about to get cut off by the semi not to kill themselves and let them go.
Yep.
So, I mean, your Christianity continues
it does.
On the road.
It does. It really does. It's a good point to make.
Build off of that point, when I went through Motorcycle Safety Foundation course, a two-day course, one of the strongly recommended points was if you're having a bad day, emotionally stressed, do not go out and ride. It takes too much concentration to ride. You can apply that to cars as well.
I think so, yeah. That's a good point. That's worth thinking about. I know how many of us will really do it. I don't know, but that's probably a point well taken if you can pull it off. Did you have something, Karen, with you?
Well, I wrote down a lot of things to help me where we are now, but road rage was one of it because I grew up, I mean, my dad is a Christian, but he called people an idiot.
Oh, yeah.
All the time. I mean, not extreme road rage, but... So, like, I know, like, now, like, I do catch myself, come on, people, like, so I've tried to at least, like, come on, people, like, that's
yeah,
the extent of
yeah.
what I say, but Jaden's just like, why are you, like, but even as Christians, we need to be careful, and so I have a lot of thoughts for me driving now with Jaden
yeah.
in the car, but,
Yeah, because they are watching you.
He asks a lot of questions, and we talk a lot about, like, when somebody just zooms past us, we talk about, you know, well, he's being selfish because
right.
he's not caring about the other people on the road. And
sure.
so we do hit a lot of the heart issues now. And I, when I learned to drive, I had on a little postcard in my car, Romans 6:14, probably taken out of context a little bit, but for sin shall not be your master because you are not under law but under grace. And I always had that as a reminder for me that to the heart issue. Like I obey the law, and I, because of God's grace for me, and to care for other people, not just because it's the law. I'm not doing it just because it's, you know, speed limit 45 because it's 45.
Right.
What that means to me as a believer. But.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just to go back to your point about the the road rage thing and stuff like that. I mean, I'm a Christian. I'm up here teaching you things. I teach you all about attitude and the attitude you should have and all that. I am more likely to sin behind the wheel of the car in terms of attitude than in any other place on the planet, other than maybe in a heat of an argument with my wife. I mean, I might come closer there, but places where it is most unfortunate to have a bad attitude and have rage, but that's where it emerges, right? When you least want it or need it. But that's when God's teaching you, you need to learn something here, buddy. And my wife will tell you, you know, and I end up calling people things that I don't even, sometimes not even in my vocabulary sometimes, when they do something in front of me on the road, she's like, he's not a, yeah, a-hole, a-hole. Like, sorry, I just, you know, I just lose it, you know. That's no excuse. That's no excuse. At all. She's back here listening. Time. My wife is reminding him it's time. See? Let me pray and we'll be dismissed. She knew I'd be having too much fun. She came to remind me. Father, thank you for these lessons. I'm glad, you know, as Karen says, you know, these are things we could all write down. But help us when we get to that stage with our kids. Help us to guide them in yet another area here that we have of life. So we pray these things in Christ's name. Amen. You're dismissed.